Authors, are you struggling to get the word out for your books? Discover the latest book marketing and publishing news, tools, and strategies every week. This is the Sell More Books Show. Each show will feature helpful tips and ideas to make your book sales soar. Visit sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and more information. And now your hosts, Jim Kukral and Brian Cohen.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 255 of the Sell More Book Show. I'm Jim Kukral from Author Marketing Club and smarterauthors.com, joined by a guest host today because Brian is not feeling that well and needed the week off, and we have Mark Lefebvre in the house. How you doing, Mark?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jim. How about you?
I'm doing wonderful as well. If you don't know who Mark is, why don't you? What's your official title at Drafted Digital?
I am the Director of Business Development for Drafted Digital.
And Mark previously was the head of the ebook business over at Kobo, and you're an author yourself, so you have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge in the business of publishing, don't you?
For sure. And just to make sure, that because we miss Brian this week, I am wearing a t-shirt from Revolution Brewing from Chicago. So there's a little bit of Brian, a little bit of Chicago here.
Oh, well, great. Well, I'm so excited to have you here, Mark. It's a pleasure to speak to you, and I know you're going to offer some great insight in today's show. So thank you again for joining us. And Brian, I hope you feel better. Toot sweet. All right. Well, anything going on in your world, Mark, that you want to point out? Anything new going on at Drafted Digital you'd like to tell us about?
Always some new things. One of the most exciting things that I still think people haven't taken advantage of is the account sharing controls that we have at Drafted Digital. So I just interviewed a virtual assistant for my own podcast earlier today. And again, this is very, very handy for handing off your tasks to other people without them having access to your bank account. So that to me is something that we still have to allow authors to exploit properly.
So that's an interesting idea. So let's say I wanted to get my virtual assistant to go into my D2D account and format my book for me. I can do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for example, because I do help a lot of authors, and Sean Costello is a good friend of mine. I've been helping him for a long, long time. Through my own Drafted Digital account, I can either manage my own stuff, or then I can toggle over, look at Sean's stuff. Then I can look at a couple other people that I've been helping out. So something you could probably take advantage of as well in the way that you help authors.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be helpful. It would be great if KDP allowed that, so you didn't have to log in as somebody else's account.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The industry is always pushing things forward, and hopefully when places like Drafted Digital innovate and push out new things, that maybe that encourages Amazon to do the same thing.
Well, I hope so. And Drafted Digital, if you haven't tried out Drafted Digital yet, you need to. Aside from the distribution service where you can easily distribute to so many wonderful places, really the ability to convert your book into an ebook format using their tool is really powerful, and it's free. All you got to do is upload your book, change some settings, and all of a sudden you've got a Mobi and an EPUB and a PDF, and you could just download those files and use them however you want to use them. So really, you should go check out draft2digital.com. All right, let's get started. We have some patrons. Oh, wait, we got to first do the winner of my happy book service. RJ Beam, you won. So if you email me, jimkukral@gmail.com, I'll get you hooked up. You can fill out the form and submit your book. Thank you so much for leaving a comment on the last episode, 254. But we do want to take care of our housekeeping here and talk about our patrons. So we have three featured patrons today, and I'm going to let Mark to read number one and number three. So Mark, take it away, number one.
Okay, the first featured patron of the week is A.S. Durfee's The Thing Speaks for Itself. To find a missing man, they'll ransack Oakland's darkest corners. Some corners will resist. The Thing Speaks for Itself is the opening book in a series of detective thrillers. If you love page-turning suspense, witty dialogue, and tenacious sleuths, then you'll love A.S. Durfee's gripping story of murder, determination, and hallucination.
All right, our second featured patron is from C. Stephen Manley, and it's a book called The Cordova Vector. All he wanted was to catch the first starship home. Instead, after 5 years in a military prison, he's accosted by gangsters, rescued by smugglers and swept up in the search for an ancient relic. With a vengeful crime lord and a Commonwealth fleet gunship both hot on his heels, Brace might not live long enough to see home again. And then we have number three.
Yes, number three is Linda Fosnett's Somebody's Darling. He finally found the love of his life, 150 years after his death. In modern-day Gettysburg, where ghosts roam among the living, Confederate soldier Jesse Spencer drifts aimlessly. The only light in his lonely existence is Lucy, a lovely waitress who works in a tavern in town. Have they found soulmates in one another, or will they lose their chance at true love if Jesse crosses over to the other side? Three amazing-sounding books this week, Jim.
Yeah, they always sound really amazing. Please go over to thesellmorebookshow.com and see the links to those books. Of course, if you want to be a patron yourself, you can become a patron at patreon.com/SMBS. As a reminder, the show gets produced every week by people who put all the show together, and we do not profit and take any of that money. It gets straight into producing the show every single week. So thank you so much to all of our patrons. All right, last week's question. The question of the week was, what's a question you could ask yourself that you think might change your author business mindset? Roseanne Bowman said, I think a big thing to keep in mind is the question, what is my goal? Being a successful writer looks differently to different people. Kyle Robert Schultz said, I think the most life-changing question for me would be, what's my end game? And Kay Riley said, a scary change would be to add an hourly rate into my ROI calculation to account for income I could be gaining if I worked an hourly job instead of writing. So Mark, I'll ask you this question. What's the question you could ask yourself that you think might change your author business mindset?
Well, you know what? I really like what Kay Riley said in terms of adding an hourly rate into the ROI. So, you know, we look at ROI and we look at what is it cost for the cover and the blurb and the editing. And I really think that's a significant one that not enough authors do. So thanks, Kay, for that comment, because that kind of prompted it in my mind as well.
Yeah, I think that putting that number is really important. When I help people build businesses, which is part of what I do, I always say to people, you know, well, what are you worth, right? I mean, you know, just because it may only take 15 minutes, but you're worth, are you okay with making $150 an hour? Are you okay with making $500 an hour? Putting a number to your time, I think, is a really valuable exercise for anyone who creates any type of product, music, content, book, whatever.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, that time is often better spent creating new products to get out into the world.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's do the tips of the week.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, brought to you by Jazzy Jim Cookwell and the bad man, Brian Cohen, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, BioDominion. Authors can see more sales and conversions by fully utilizing their Author Central page, according to author Amy Collins in a post on the New Shelves blog. Collins recommends putting a list of your books in your bio and using relevant keywords that people may be using in Amazon search. Authors may be missing out on some of the elements that Author Central offers, like a blog feed, Twitter feed, biography, bibliography, and the video. That's tip one. Tip two, demystify your listify. Authors can grow an email list from zero by following step-by-step instructions from author Christina McDonald in a post on Jane Friedman's blog. McDonald recommends using a combination of giveaways and Facebook advertising to connect with targeted readers. By updating the thank you pages after a reader signs up, authors can also direct new subscribers to like their Facebook page or join a reader group. Keeping the process streamlined and basic means that list growth doesn't have to be expensive or complicated. That's tip two. And tip three is the myth of the superfan. New authors should stop trying to connect with elusive superfan, according to Ann R. Allen in a post on her blog. Allen suggests that the idea of a superfan is more of a myth and that writers may alienate readers with practices such as emailing too frequently, sharing irrelevant personal details in newsletters, and trying to get authors in other genres to share their books. Instead, authors should be engaging and humble, utilizing social media and blogs to interact. Allen states that she favors an author blog over a newsletter because a blog has to offer value, so people will choose to stop by to read and comment. Engaging in one-on-one conversations with readers who reply to newsletters may not be producing superfans, but encouraging needy readers who may take up the author's time. All right, so I'm going to start here with this myth of the superfan. I disagree with this. with this, what this author is saying here. You know, I firmly believe that you're going to have a better chance of connecting with somebody who's going to be that lifelong customer if you personally engage with that person. And I can prove this in multiple ways that I've done it through my 20-year career of building businesses and creating content and blogging and books and everything like that. What's your take on this? Do you think that people really just want to read blogs and be done with it?
Well, it kind of feels like a throwback to the early days of the internet, where broadcast as opposed to connecting with fans. So I saw David Goggren post about this earlier in the week, and it was kind of funny because it looks like she misinterpreted everything. And I don't know if it was on purpose because it was like, hey, I'm going to do a clickbait thing and engage people in some dialogue on her blog, which is kind of what she's pointing people to. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's almost like she purposely misinterpreted the concept of Superfan and made it a mythological beast as opposed to, you know, and I look at what David Goggren's done and what Tammy Labreck has done in terms of helping you understand that it's about connecting with your readers. It's about finding those human connections in a digital world, which I think is so critical. And she kind of misses the point. I get her point. I understand her point, but I also think it's just so skewed in one direction. It doesn't leave it open for the possibility that, well, maybe there's people who don't want to go read blogs. Maybe they'd rather just consume content that comes into their inbox in the morning. So interesting when you see a post like that.
Yeah, it reminds me of the whole 1,000 true fans argument, which I've talked about a million times. I'd rather have 1,000 true fans than 100,000 people who aren't subscribed and really don't care.
Yeah.
You know? 1,000 true fans you can build an entire career off if you're a content creator, because the true fans will buy everything that you put out regardless of price. They'll promote you to everyone without asking. They'll tell everyone in the world about you. And I think that, you know, in this case, if the super fan is that person, I think that's way more valuable. And those people want personal connections. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I do get your point as well. I mean, can you possibly keep that up? I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk is blown up and he's one of the biggest brands in online media. And, you know, he still claims that he tweets everything himself.
You know? Yeah. And so many times a day, right? The videos he shares from the back of a cab and again, he's made it part of his life, which I think is, you know, that's him. That's his brand.
Yeah. And I couldn't do that because first of all, it would be annoying. I just don't want it. So let's talk about this email list one. Growing your email list, we all agree, is really important. And she says, updating your thank you pages after a reader signs up. Authors can also direct new subscribers to like their Facebook page. This is just funnel stuff, right? You have your front and back matter in your book or wherever it's coming from. You're getting a funnel to get people to sign up for your email newsletter list. Isn't that it?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, I like the combination of giveaways and Facebook advertising. So again, it's not relying on just one thing, but it's bringing them to your newsletter from a few different places. I mean, there's always great content. Jane Friedman always provides great content, and this article from Christina is excellent.
Do you have you updated your Author Central page? Like, I haven't done it in a long time, but I added videos to mine. I have updated bio. I mean, I used to have a blog. I don't have a blog anymore, so I used to have like a blog feed in there. Like,
I update mine on a regular basis. I think the biggest mistake I see authors make, because again, I'm helping a lot of authors that are new and just coming into the business, is at the very least do a .com Author Central page. But then again, you've got to remember Amazon has 12 different websites. Not every one of them has Author Central. So the .ca one, for example, which is a crappy version of the website. Everyone in Canada just uses Amazon.com anyways. They don't have one. But you know, specifically, at least in .com and .UK, it's free. You can link your blog to it. You can post videos there. You can put your Twitter feed in there. It's an easy way to increase your SEO on Amazon. And then, I mean, it kind of goes to the next phase too, is you can do the same thing on Goodreads. You can have a free author profile with similar listings there too. So, you know, taking advantage of that costs you nothing but a little bit of time.
Yeah, and the jury's out whether or not anyone really goes that far to read about you. I guess they might if they become a true fan or a super fan like we were discussing. But yeah, it's really worth a little bit of investment of time to make that happen. You never know.
Yeah.
Lots of media people might find you that way and get some information from you. invite you to be on their podcast or be on a news show or something. So it's important to have it updated. All right, let's do the news. Here's number five.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Private AI. OpenAI's artificial intelligence has become so adept at writing text that it is being deemed too unsafe for the public, according to a post on The Hustle. When Elon Musk and Sam Altman founded OpenAI in 2015, the goal was to keep AI software public rather than behind closed doors. But GPT-2, OpenAI's program, is so good, it produces writing that's virtually indistinguishable from real journalism, opening the door for increasingly sophisticated fake news. But many news organizations are already employing various machine-assisted writing. OpenAI's creators hope to release their program once checks have been put in place to better control it for public use. So we've kind of gone back and forth on this sort of topic about AI for the last year or so on the show. Now, Mark, there is actual proof of life here.
Yeah.
There's potential that an AI program could actually write a book that is comprehensible, or at least, you know, to the point where you could edit it. And do you find that to be a scary process?
Yeah, and again, it's maybe it's more the science fiction slash weird fiction writer in me that sees this and thinks, oh my God, the tales and the stories that could come out of this, right? In this sort of the Skynet sort of world where the computers are now spinning stories and using, you know, using AI to control things. Again, you get into fake news and you get into all the stuff that's going on in politics, and you think, what if there was a computer somewhere that was playing with us and specifically creating news stories to feed our biases, to further drive a division in the U.S. between, you know, the two main camps? I see this as a terrifying thing, and I haven't even thought about what that could mean for writing, although it stems back to what we talked about in the tips, and that's the importance of connecting with your fans and engaging, because the one thing that's different between you and the other, let's say, thrillers out there is that connection that maybe you have, or that this is your story. You're the only one who can tell it that way, even if a sophisticated machine is capable of pounding out a compelling plot.
Yeah, I'm more worried about it than you are, because I really see this as something that can take off in the next 5 to 10 years. And I see this not just with content, like written content, but I see this with voice. I see this with animation. I was reading about a program the other day that's really become so easy to create animated movies with. Amazon Polly with the voices. You know, when you combine all of this stuff together, I really do worry that at some point you're going to be able to create a book. Like, hey, I'm going to write a book about military sci-fi, and I'm going to throw in some character names. Heck, maybe you don't even have to put names in. Just generate. And it just says, okay, here are all the things that are real popular with the top 5,000 military sci-fi books out there. And we're just going to copy those, change some names, change some storylines, come up with some unique stuff. And then all you got to do is put a cover on it. And that could be a real problem if it's good. That's the question, if it's good.
Yeah. And I think eventually the technology will catch up. But hopefully by the time that happens, there's going to be ways to still work within that, right? I mean, the new technology doesn't completely abolish the old.
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay. Not yet.
Not until the Skynet takes over, Mark.
That's right.
That's the discussion, right?
So as we're huddled around and the robots are coming to kill us and you and I are in a cave somewhere, just terrified for our lives and sitting by the fire, I'll tell you a story to distract you from the terrors in the world.
Well, I mean, it all sounds so post-apoc, but but honestly, I mean, what happens when that comes? I mean, the question is this, you know, consumers control what content sells and what doesn't sell, because right. They're the ultimate judge. The social proof they say it's bad, then it's never going to continue on. But what happens when you reach that threshold point where they either don't care that it's not as good as this other stuff that's out there, or that it's actually sort of good and they're just like, that's fine, right? Like,
yeah,
you could see a point where people are like, I just love military sci-fi books, and boy, this guy writes 10 a month and they're really good, so, and they're 99 cents each, and I'm just going to keep buying them because the story just keeps getting better and better. And does that person really care that it was written by a computer if they ever even found out? They probably would if they found out, but they would never find out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That could be like a new Patterson thing that happens, right?
Just right. So then what happens then when the apathy steps in and people are like, you know, I really don't care that it was written by a computer. It's still good. Right. And then people are like, okay, it's still good. I know it was written by a computer, but I still enjoyed it. And that's a scary moment right there.
Yeah, that is. That is.
All right. Let's do number four.
Number four.
Choose your own audio. ChooseCo, the company behind the Choose Your Own Adventure books, has partnered with Amazon to offer interactive audiobooks through Alexa. Currently, only two books are available through the app, but having this application framework in place may open the door for other interactive fiction. To listen to the books, users simply need to give permission through their app, and then they can listen and tell the device which choice to make. Similar to Audible, the device will hold your place in a book after each use and has professional narrators and music. Exactly who is profiting from this deal is unclear, as ChooseCo is offering the books for free. So probably this is just a great way to test the concept, mm-hmm. to put it out there. They want to see if people are interested in this. They want to see how it's going to be perceived and if people enjoy it. And that makes a heck of a lot of sense for me. Do you see a future, Mark, where there's a, you know, choose your own adventure in an audiobook format, because they certainly are trying.
Oh yeah, for sure. If I can roll back to Netflix and the Black Mirror choose your own adventure, you know, where they got sued by this company. Did you check that out? Did you experience that at all?
So I just started watching the movie Bandersnatch, and yeah. I hope about 15 minutes of it, so don't spoil anything.
No, I'm not going to, but I mean, I went through that. I spent hours and I had a blast with it, because this is the kind of thing I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for that virtual augmented reality and the storytelling that can happen with this sort of thing. I've always thought a location-based virtual app, choose your own adventure, where to solve a mystery, you have to actually be in a physical place. I always thought that would be a great thing to do. So I'm so excited that Amazon is working with ChooseCo and that they're experimenting here, because it's experimenting and storytelling that's going to pave the path for that next new thing, which is, again, more opportunities for writers and ways for people to explore storytelling in different mediums. I love this concept. I wish it was on Google Home, because then I'd be able to check it out. I don't have an Alexa. So if I had it on Google Home, I'd definitely be checking this out as a consumer.
Millions of people do. You know, I've always argued that the way to create mass adoption is to have the actual delivery manufacturing device in people's hands, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's why they discount Alexa devices, because they want them sitting in people's homes so that people figure out ways to use them.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is really interesting moving forward. As entertainment and content tastes change, will people... I always like to go back to this. When I was a kid in the 70s, I would go over to my friend's house, the neighbor, and the dad would put on literally the old albums from the 50s, like War of the Worlds and The Blob. And we would sit in the dark in the basement listening to an album, and it was the scariest thing I've ever listened to in my life.
Yes.
And I freaked out, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so scared. You know, and it was literally in an album of just someone talking.
And oh, yeah.
Imagine if you a kid being able to listen through their phone or through an Alexa device the same type of way, and then being able to choose where the story goes. I mean, I think you nailed it. That's just wonderful storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow on an album listening when I was a kid, and I still get frightened just thinking about the wonderful narrator voice and the music sound effects. And yeah, but then imagine immersing yourself in the story because now you're in control. That makes it, yeah, that fascinating. I can't wait to see what happens in this area.
Yeah, it's going to continue to keep going like that. And, you know, you wonder what everything's going to look like in 5 years from now or 10 years. It's just, I think we could see a totally different game. All right, here's number three.
Number three.
The early bird gets the sales. Focusing on the platforms she enjoyed, epic fantasy author Brianna Bose launched her first book with 142 pre-orders and 20 sales of the hardcover on Ingram Spark, according to a post in the 20 Books to 50K Facebook group and a story shared with the show. Bose doubled down on the Facebook and Instagram and utilized promotion threads in Reddit as well. Interacting early and often in her reader feedback Facebook group helped her understand the platform and build engagement before she started sharing promotional posts about her book. She found beta readers through Facebook groups and by pitching to bloggers. Bose says that the authors who are just starting out should focus on their craft, invest in editors, and start early with social media. So I am seeing something that is really helping with people getting reviews is people reaching out to people on social media, like through tweets or Facebook messages, and offering art copies of their book without being pushy. And she says here that she interacted early and often in her Facebook group to help her understand the platform and build engagement before she started sharing promotional posts about her book. Anything in here pop out at you?
No, I think it comes back to that. You know, even at the end of it, start early with social media. And again, it's engage early and often. Don't sell, engage. And I think that's one of the keys here. And the other thing I find fascinating is the hardcover sales through Ingram Spark. So again, not just thinking about the ebook, but remembering that there are readers who prefer other, you know, other mediums for engaging. You know, we just talked about audio. So again, she's not just excited about the 142 pre-orders, but she also got 20 hardcover sales. So again, she's not focusing only on one medium. And I think that's also important.
Pitching to bloggers is something that I've always already noticed works really well, and to podcasters. A lot of my clients write very specialized books about very specific topics. One of them writes into like stories from the Holocaust. And, you know, we got on a call and we just started searching iTunes for podcasts of Jewish history and war and the Holocaust. And there's a ton of them. And then we went to their website and they have blogs and they have podcasts and they have contact forms. And, you know, hey, send them an email. Say, I wrote this book about this topic. Here's what's really interesting about it. I'd love to come on your podcast and talk about it. I'd love to write a blog post for you. And that works. It really does work, especially if you niche down and focus on an audience that is talking about what your book is about. And I got to be honest with you. They probably get a lot of pitches, but they're desperate for content. Like a lot of people who do podcasts or write blogs, they're always desperate. They're looking for people to come talk about stuff. So if you make an engaging pitch, it usually pans out for you.
Yeah. I mean, especially the way you mentioned it, you're focusing on, you're providing them a solution to their problem, and their problem is content, and you're giving them good content, and you're giving them, you know, a new perspective or whatever within their niche market. And that's ideal, right? Because you're approaching them with a solution that gives them something valuable. Yeah. It works really, really well.
Yeah. I highly suggest that if you are an author, who writes in a genre, go over to iTunes or wherever you look for podcasts and just do a search for podcasts related to your topic and see what shows up, and then follow the links to their website and look if they have a contact page or a social media account or an email and make a pitch to them. And don't sell. Say, I've got great stories to tell that your audience is going to love. Here's one of them, and see what happens. All right, let's do number two.
Number two.
Patreon users may be in for big changes, according to a post from Nate Hulfelder on the Digital Reader. Patreon CEO Jack Conte told CNBC that because of its growth, the company will need to find a way to maintain a profitable model. which may result in paying creators less of a percentage. Boo. In late 2017, Patreon announced a plan to reduce the percentages paid out to creators and then reverse that decision after a public backlash. Hofelder compared this path to that of Barnes & Noble and suggests that a better course of action might be for Patreon to find a buyer or expand into a new niche. So this is a model. I did an interview with Jack Conte when Patreon first came out. He is very much an artist before businessman, and maybe he's a businessman. Now, the reason that Patreon exists and the reason that Patreon worked was because it ended up paying so much to the content creator. And it's hypocritical of me to say that they need to change that model, because I believe that one of traditional publishing's biggest issues is that they don't pay enough to the author. And frankly, I don't think Amazon pays enough to the author either. But at the end of the day, they're running a business. It's a volume business. If they're not getting enough volume, they got to start paying less, and that kill the business. What do you think?
Well, I look at it this way. I mean, a platform like Kindle, a platform like Patreon has provided a tool for other people to use or not use. It's completely their choice whether they want to use it. They made it easy, simple, trustworthy for people to go and support, you know, the Sell More Book Show podcast, for example, or to support other artists that they want to support. We can go and create our own platforms and worry about how we're going to deal with different tax issues and VAT and all the other things that Patreon handles for you, or we use the simple service. So at the end of the day, for any service that I use, because obviously I've worked for services, I say, here are the tools we built. We're a business and we have to stay profitable. Therefore, we need to keep some cash in order to keep funding. It's really a person's choice whether or not they can do that. I think I love Nate's perspective, and I love reading the blog, but I don't think it's fair to compare it to Barnes & Noble, only because that's a completely different mess. And Patreon at the very least is digital, whereas Barnes & Noble is, you know, mostly physical, and then they've got this digital offshoot in Nook. So I think that comparison I think was a little bit unfair. And I think Patreon's got a lot more flexibility and they can turn the ship in a much more effective way, because again, their assets are digital. And again, they demonstrated when they changed, they demonstrated that they actually listen to the community, and that's critical for survival in a digital world.
Yeah, this is a tough one because of that backlash that they had, and people started to freak out about it. You know, how are you going to do it again? I mean, the excuse is that we're not making money or we're going to go out of business. People don't care. Like, people are like, sorry, then go out of business, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be like, I don't care that I'm getting 1%. I care that I'm getting 1% less. If you're not going to give me what you already gave me, then fine, go out of business. And I think that's just the reality of the situation. That's how people think.
It's
just,
oh, yeah, for sure.
So, you know, I don't think that they need to find a buyer. I think they just need to find more customers. This is a volume business. Drafted Digital is a volume business, right? You guys help people publish books, and then you take a percentage, right? Yeah.
We only make money when the author makes money. And again, very, I think being transparent about where the money's coming from as well is critical. So people are very aware how it works. I think that's an important aspect. And I think Patreon's smart enough to navigate through this effectively without, you know, hurting or offending people and yet still being able to turn a profit.
PayPal's entire business model is built off of taking a cut of a transaction.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they've gotten into loans. And you can go get a loan through PayPal right away. So maybe Nate's point about finding a new niche, is a good way to do it. Maybe Patreon can start giving out loans or going. I mean, Kickstarter's entire business model is based around letting people put up stuff and then taking a cut. Same with the rest of them, Indiegogo, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, and of course, what we know from those sites is that, you know, it's the 90-10 rule. You know, 10% of the people are making 90% of the profit.
Yeah.
You know, the big players. So, how do you increase that piece of the pie? You know, I would say to Jack is just continue on the way you're going and try to grow the company. But trying to reduce how much people pay, I think, is just going to cause unneeded angst between and in the press and everything. But who knows? I'm not the CEO of the company. So I wish them much success. I really love Patreon.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do our number one news story of the week.
And now the number one top five news item.
Break it till you make it. Author Bridget Baker found success with Facebook ads for her young adult dystopian trilogy after seeing little to no traction from many popular strategies. She tried paid promos, rapid release, newsletter swaps, and AMS ads without seeing much success. After investing in a Facebook advertising course, Baker found the sweet spot, moving her daily page reads from around 5,000 on a good day up to 25,000. Her rank also moved from the 20 to 30,000 range to the 2 to 3,000 range, keeping her books near other popular series like The Hunger Games. Baker recommends testing methods other authors use until you can find the one that works for you. So there's so many things you can try, but sometimes you just find that unicorn that works for you and you should triple and quadruple down on it, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I love this story because it demonstrates critical elements for success. One of them is patience, and we don't give enough credence to that. You know, it's gone are the days you can slap together a really crappy cover, unedited book and publish it to Kindle for 99 cents and make a killing, right? It was a long time ago. Now you have to try different things. The algorithms are constantly changing. You're constantly having to educate yourself and listen to great podcasts like this one and explore and experiment and fail and try different things and run experiments and try them again. And she kept at it and then discovered that some things worked and some things didn't. But if she had given up early, she never would have had this success. So kudos to Bridget for continuing to work at this. This is a critical element that authors need to be aware of. And even something that worked last month may not be the thing, you know, so you constantly have to explore new ways of trying things.
Yeah. And that's the unfortunate part about all business and marketing is that not everything's going to work. You know, I'm doing a speech later this evening and I talk about getting past the yellow page mindset. You know, 20 years ago, you know, yellow pages were how you got business if you fixed it, right? People pulled out the yellow pages and found your ad. And if you had the biggest ad in the first placement, you got all the calls.
Yeah.
But 20 years later, when my dishwasher breaks, I just go to YouTube, YouTube a video, how to repair it. And a minute and a half later, I fixed my dishwasher. I don't need the yellow pages. I don't need to call a mechanic. I don't need to call an appliance repair person.
Yeah. Or maybe you just ask your Amazon Echo, and they'll tell you someone's close by and actually available.
Well, yeah, and then that's the second step where I ask my phone, "Hey, who send me an appliance repair person who does this?" So the game is changing, right? You know, unskippable businesses learn how to think beyond yellow page marketing, and in the world that we're living in right now, if AMS ads aren't working and newsletter swaps aren't working and paid promos aren't working, sometimes the Facebook one will simply work. That's why I think it's important to do, like, Brian's a great example of he's doing one thing right now. Like, he's doing AMS ads and he's doing it every single day on his Relentless Authors Advertise podcast. And he's going in every single day. He's posting results from his ads and he's trying it. And he's already starting to see some amazing ROI from that. And I think he's going to do it for like a year, which is insane.
Yeah.
But he's doing one thing. And I saw a comment on his post in his Selling for Authors group the other day. And it said, "Brian, why haven't you tried Facebook ads?" And he's like, "I'm focusing on one thing right now."
Yeah.
Now, the disadvantage to doing that one thing is that what if it doesn't work, right? Like, so you spend 6 months working on something and it doesn't work. And my entire career is based on something like that. You know, I've tried to build a brand or a business or something and I've either been too early or too late or it just wasn't the right time or what for whatever reason. And I spent 6 months of time working on something that never panned out. And that's just the nature of being an entrepreneur, being an author, and trying to be successful. You know, once you find that one thing that works, then you got to take that unicorn, get on, hold on to the horn, and ride.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And like you said, Brian's been around long enough that he knows that he's going to try this. He's going to give it a, you know, the good old college try. He's going to give it, you know, his all and be patient and experiment. And then if that works, great. He's going to ride it while he can. And then when things change, he'll go try something else. He's constantly evolving and changing and updating. And that is important.
Yeah. I mean, like you, I deal with a lot of authors who, you know, just haven't done even the very basic stuff. So once you fix the basic stuff, the description, the title, the cover, the categories, the pricing, you know, going wide, all that. Once you fix all of that stuff, then it's the next level. It's like, okay, how do I get more reviews? Then it's the next level. How do I get more people to pay attention to my book? Okay, we try Amazon ads. We try newsletter swaps. We tried some rapid release, you know. Sometimes your book just doesn't sell, which is the harsh reality of the world that we're living in. Sometimes what you try just doesn't work. And then you have, I actually spoke to an author the other day who writes in a genre, and we did some KDP Rocket research, and there's like literally like nobody making money or buying books in that category. And the conversation I had to have with the author was, people aren't buying books here. He said, well, I don't want to tone down my writing. I said, yeah, but people don't want to read en masse what you're writing. And I could sense the pushback on me. It was like, yeah, Jim, but I'm not changing what I write. And without being a jerk, it's kind of like you have to say that's not what people are buying. So you might actually have to think about what you're doing, right? I've talked to plenty of authors who write things that people aren't interested in reading, and that's just a bad end game.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you may need to re-examine your goals. And if your goal is to get rich off this product, you maybe reassess what the goal is. Maybe the goal is to satisfy a small handful of readers who love that niche. And then you can be successful if that's what they want, rather than denying reality and saying, no, Jim, I'm going to become a bazillionaire because I'm going to sell this book to 16 people. I mean, and that's a tough thing to swallow, right? And to recognize that and to pay attention to the markets. But then the other thing I've seen, having been, you know, in the book industry since the early 90s, is that there are things that are in and out of a popularity. So for example, it used to always be that, well, the New York agents are saying that, well, vampire books aren't selling. But then the next big vampire book comes out and it's a hot thing again. And then it goes through a phase where it's dead again. So even if the market is not, burning up for that area now, you never know what could happen where it becomes popular. So the author who follows their passion and has a realistic expectation that they're not going to, you know, make it big on that because that's how it's selling right now on Kindle. You never know. In 6 months, you know, if they follow their passion and they're happy and they're continuing to write the things they want to write and tell the stories they want to tell, there will be some changes in the market that nobody can anticipate. So, you know, it again depends on their goal. If the goal is to get rich quick now, not going to happen. If the goal is to write the passion project and maybe we'll see what else happens, that maybe that's gravy for them.
Absolutely. All right. We need a question of the week. Would you like to maybe do something around the choose your own audio?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Question. Yeah, I was thinking about, would it be, have you ever written a choose your own ending style? Because we don't want to get sued by these people. Have you ever written a choose your own ending style story? Paperback, ebook, audiobook, which of the formats you'd be interested in experimenting with, or is that too complicated of a question?
Good question of the week. I really like that. All right. Well, we'll do that. I'll have to write that down after. Let me write it down just so I make sure I have it exactly as the way you said.
Would you ever write a choose your own ending style adventure? And would it be, or have you ever written? Have you ever, or would you ever write choose your own ending style adventure? What format would be more comfortable, paper, ebook, or audio? Because again, I've seen experiments in all formats. I've even bought an independently published choose your own adventure style book from an indie author that I know for my son as well, and he loved it. So, you know, I think that it's an interesting market for people.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show this week, Mark. I really appreciate you stepping in at the very last minute.
Oh, thanks, Jim. I hope Brian is feeling better, too.
I do as well. And I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode. It was great to have Brian on, or I'm sorry, Mark on. I'm so used to talking to Brian every single week. obviously, go check out draftdigital.com if you haven't yet. My opinion, a wonderful place to go and have your ebooks formatted and get all the files that you need, and a wonderful place to publish your book into multiple distribution centers. Just a really great company that we all enjoy, and Mark is one of the lead guys over there, so go check it out. All right, Mark, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Brian, I'm Jim Kukrill. Have a great week of bookselling, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.